About 100 years ago, Sherlock Holmes was described as one of the three most famous people who ever lived, the other two being Jesus Christ and Houdini. There are some who claim that he is a fictional character, but this notion is, of course, absurd. Every schoolchild knows what he looks like, what he does for a living, and most know many of his peculiar characteristics. The tall, slender, hawk-nosed figure, with his deerstalker hat and Inverness cape, is instantly recognizable in every corner of the world. In addition to the superb stories describing his adventures written by his friend, roommate, and chronicler, Dr. John H. Watson, with the assistance of his literary agent, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, Holmes has been impersonated on the stage, television, radio, and in countless motion pictures. More than 25,000 books, stories, and articles have been written about him by famous authors, amateur writers, and scholars. This collection of Sherlock Holmes parodies and pastiches is the largest ever assembled. It contains serious pastiches by distinguished literary figures, equally good stories by less exalted Sherlockians, and some truly dreadful parodies included here for historical interest more than reading pleasure. They are, mercifully, brief. Inevitably, I have drawn on the work of others. The first and greatest anthology of its kind is The Misadventures of Sherlock Holmes, 1944, edited by Ellery Queen, a brilliant, pioneering anthologist whose best collections, 101 Years Entertainment, The Great Detective Stories, 1841 to 1941, its sequel, To the Queen's Taste, 1946, The Female of the Species, 1943, and others are true cornerstones of detective fiction. Other scholars and aficionados who have unearthed material and whose books have provided access to rare and obscure material are Robert Ady, Richard Lancelin Green, Charles Press, Marvin Kaye, and Mike Ashley. My deep affection for Holmes, now exceeding 50 years of reading, has resulted in the addition of stories to this massive tome that never before have been collected in a book devoted to the great detective. While I may not fully concur with Watson's assessment that Holmes is the best and wisest man whom I have ever known, an accolade reserved for a very few dear friends, he has been a trusted and worthy companion for the greatest percentage of my life. Sherlock, he was nearly named Sherrinford, was born on January 6, 1854, on the farmstead of Mycroft, the name of his older brother, in the North Riding of Yorkshire. He solved his first case, eventually titled The Gloria Scott, while a 20-year-old student at Oxford. Following graduation, he became the world's first consulting detective, a vocation he followed for 23 years. In January 1881, he was looking for someone to share his new quarters at 221B Baker Street when a friend introduced him to Dr. John H. Watson. Before agreeing to share the apartment, the two men aired their respective shortcomings. Holmes confesses, "I get in the dumps at times and don't open my mouth for days on end." He also smokes a vile shag tobacco and conducts experiments with loathsome-smelling chemicals. He fails, however, to mention an affection for cocaine. Although he ruefully notes his fondness for scratching away at the violin while in contemplation, he proves to be a virtuoso who can calm his roommate's raw nerves with a melodious air. Watson's admitted faults include the keeping of a bull pup, a strong objection to arguments because his nerves cannot stand them, a penchant for arising from bed at all sorts of ungodly hours, and an immense capacity for laziness. "I have another set of vices when I'm well," he says, "but those are the principal ones at present." They become friends, and Watson chronicles the deeds of his illustrious roommate, often to the displeasure of Holmes, who resents the melodramatic and sensational tales. He believes that the affairs, if told at all, should be put to the public as straightforward exercises in cold logic and deductive reasoning.